We know that Parshas Dvarim is always read before Tisha B'Av. That's a crucial part of our laning schedule, and it's a part of why it took us so long to catch up to the laning in Eretz Yisrael. And it's really quite astounding when you think about the connections between Dvarim and Tisha B'Av. And the one that comes to mind most often is that Lashon of Eicha, Eicha Salavadi, which we lane in the trup of Eicha, and that certainly seems to be a blatant connection to Tisha B'Av. But there's also so much more, and a lot of it is really in our Aliyah, in the third Aliyah, where Moshe recounts the whole story of the Meraglim. And we know that historically it's the Meraglim that led to us being in our situation now in the anticipation of Tisha B'Av. The Gemara tells us that the crying of the Jewish people in receiving the report of the Meraglim, that was the original negative Tisha B'Av, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu declared that you're crying now, B'chia Shel Chinam, Ani Ekfu Lachem B'chia L'Doros, that Tisha B'Av led to this Tisha B'Av and all the Tisha B'Avs in between. Tisha B'Av was designated as a day of disaster, Yom Muchan L'Paranios, because of that original report of the Meraglim. And this Aliyah, which we will read on this year, it's actually the 9th of Av, but the Erev Tisha B'Av in practice, Erev of the observance of Tisha B'Av, couldn't be more relevant in helping to remind us of all of the issues that are on display with that original chait. And we'll just spend a few minutes looking at the language of the psukim here in this third Aliyah, which really emphasize to us and highlight some of the lessons that we need to learn specifically for Tisha B'Av, and hopefully this should have some kind of an impact. So the Aliyah begins, V'tikruvu ne'lai kulchem. So Moshe is describing the appeal for the mission of the Meraglim, and he says, you all came together towards me, you all came and approached me. And Rashi understands this language of Itikruvu Ne'lai is meant to convey it was Berbuvia, that there was no Derech Eretz, that the young were pushing the old, and the Zakenim were pushing the leaders, and there was a complete mixture of how things should be without any kind of Derech Eretz, without any kind of civility. And this is also a crucial setting of the stage for what's being described here. This is not some minor detail, but this tells us about what was going on. The Netziv writes that it's important to help us appreciate that one could have thought that, okay, that even if things ended up badly, but the plan to send the Meraglim, that was a good plan to begin with. And you see that that's not the case. You see that they behaved in such a way, without any Derech Eretz, that shows you the plan was never on the right path. And then you point out the altar of Kelm, and Rebbe of Kamenetsky as a comment in his Emes Yaakov and others, that the message here is being conveyed that the source of the whole downfall, the Shoresh of the Chait, was the behilus and the pezizus, was this whole sense of anxiety and being completely discombobulated and being without any type of awareness of how things should be and totally losing one's composure. That's essentially the source of this avera. The Kli Yakar writes that the sin started in chipazon, it started in this kind of disregard, and therefore they were carried along in the path that they wanted to go on. The whole notion that one is brought along the path that they themselves start, that essentially is what is being displayed here with the Chait Meraglim, that the whole initiative came from this place of complete hefkeris, so to speak. And the Kli Yakar goes on to say, in a very scary kind of fashion, that we have not yet been cleaned from this bad trait. We have not yet purified ourselves from this midah, and this is what destroyed our two Batei Mikdash, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still watching us at Yom HaZeh for this trait. So very powerful and scary words, and this is something also to internalize and to appreciate. And Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger in a Sefer Eshes Faseinu, he writes, following this line of thought, that nowadays people say that they want to fix things and they want to help some kind of societal problem, but they do so by creating a whole bahala, by creating a whole upset and doing things in a very disrespectful fashion and speaking in overly critical ways, in ways that show that they're not really trying to help, they're just trying to turn everything upside down. And that's essentially this midah of the Meraglim and of the Jewish people at the time of Meraglim that's being displayed. Rav Kook, in his comments, in his Ein Hayah to Maseches Bikurim, it's brought in the Sfarim of Rav Kook al Torah, that this also, the particular lack of Derech Eretz here, the disregard for the hierarchy, the fact that the young thought they were just as entitled as those who were older and those who were wiser and more experienced, so that is so crucial to our society to protect this hierarchy and to protect this sense of awareness, and the fact that we love everyone equally, that we have this universal love that Rav Kook was so well known for, that doesn't mean that we just equate everyone, it doesn't mean that we lose that sense of respect for those who are wiser and those who are older. And in the Sefer Yunim Baparsha of Avram Heschel Reichman, so he goes at length to discuss how this was really the shorish of the whole chait, that everyone thought they knew best, everyone thought that they can run things, and that there's no role for wisdom and there's no role for appropriate leadership. And perhaps this can be compared. We mentioned the whole pasuk of Eicha Salavadi and how we read that in the trap of Eicha. Shem Yishmuel, Sachet Shavar Rebbe, the son of the Avnei Nezer, had a comment about that, that there's something that's hard to understand about the idea that we see that pasuk as a sad pasuk, because Chazal tell us really that it reflects the power of the Jewish people, the strength of the Jewish people, that they had diversity and they had many different opinions. And he suggests that maybe that's the point, that really that kind of diversity should be a strength if it's handled properly. But the fact that we have let that be a source of hatred and a source of machlokas, that's what we're crying about. That's why we're sitting on Tisha B'Av, because we have taken what should be a healthy diversity and a way of having discourse and discussion and wisdom and turned it into a source of mutual hatred and fighting and bickering. And that's the whole problem. So to hear the fact that there was this lack of civility and this lack of recognition of wisdom and age and experience, and that let people turn everything upside down, so that itself is very much setting the stage for what this Aveira is. The Pasuk continues that they said, Vatomru Nishalcha Nishlacha Anashim Lefaneinu Nishlacha Anashim Lefaneinu V'yachbru Lanu Es Haaretz. Let's send... They send spies ahead of us, and they are going to spy out the land. And Chazal understand that this language of a Yachparu is actually a language of already being oriented in a negative way. That's the Gemara in Sota and Daf Lamed Daled, that they were looking to try to embarrass the land and to speak gnai about it. And this is perhaps a reflection of a general attitudinal issue. There is a mahalach that some have, it's quoted from the Maggid of Wukumir, that part of what went wrong with the whole mission of the spies is that the Meraglim were meant to really be agents of Moshe. That was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had endorsed. And instead, Bnei Yisrael wanted them to be their agents. And that was part of the problem, that Bnei Yisrael had a different mentality than Moshe would have had if the Meraglim were really representing him the way that was supposed to be. And that language of Vayachbaru is really reflective of a different kind of orientation, as opposed to Vayasuru, which would have been more in line of Moshe's type of mission. So in any event, so they send them to look, seek out the land, and V'yashivu osono davar, they're supposed to respond back to us something. So Rashi says over here that they were asking what language do they speak, which many of the later Mefarshim say they don't understand. Why is that the issue? What language they speak? Panim Yafos and others discuss various approaches to this question. And the Maral understands in his Gur Aryeh that every language is associated with a specific nation, and the language tells us something about the nation. And that's also a very important point, that we know that the way we talk is very reflective of who we are. That's something that's always an issue. People talk in a less refined manner, people talk in a more refined manner. It says a lot about who they are. And if they're looking to try to get a sense of what kind of challenges are ahead of them, so this is a major part of it, and it's also a emphasis for us of the importance of realizing how we talk and what it says about us. So just to skip ahead a little bit here. So they went to seek out the land, so they had this mission, and they reported back in a negative way, and they didn't want to go. So Pasuk Chavav tells us, V'lo avisem la'alos v'tamru espi Hashem elokeichem. So you didn't want to go up to the land, and Pashas, that means that you didn't listen to God, you refused his mitzvah. Rav Teichtal, the eventual author of the Im HaBanu Smecha and the Sefer Mishnah Sacher, so he has an interesting interpretation of this pasuk. He says, well, avisam la'alos, that because you had your bias, you didn't want to go, you'd already decided you didn't want to go. So then, v'tamru, from the language of tmura, that you traded, you changed a mitzvah for an avera, that here you could have been part of this great mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and instead you turned it, because of your bias, into an avera of Dibas Haaretz. And again, that's very much reflective of the whole nature of the Chet HaMeraglim. And the next pasuk tells us, pasuk of Zayin, v'teragnu, that's a lashon of lashon hara, that's what it means, quoting a pasuk in Mishlei and Perek Yud Ches, that's the meaning of it. So that itself is interesting, that here the idea that lashon hara is really about how you understand something, and it's about how you conceptualize and how you contextualize something. So they saw Kadosh Baruch Hu and his intentions in a certain way. It's also interesting that Rashi goes on to use the phrase motzi diba, and that highlights the fact that we talk about lashon hara and motzi shemra, and how exactly to translate them. And it sounds like from the Rambam and the Chofetz Chaim that lashon hara refers to something true, and motzi shemra, hotzas diba, is considered to be falsehood. But we see that the lashon of Chazal, they're really closely related terms, and in any event, they're closely related terms, that lashon hara certainly does not mean something that is literally true. And we see that certainly from this Rashi, because what is it that they go on to say? Hirsch understands v'teragnu meaning to incite, but here Rashi's language of lashon hara and motzi dibra. So the pasuk goes on to say besinas Hashem osanu. That's what they said. Besinas Hashem osanu hotzi anu meretz Mitzrayim. That God hates us, so he took us out specifically that we should be killed. So of course that's ridiculous. And Rashi quotes also an idea from the Sifrei that this is kind of projection, that the way you think, so you project that onto others. Rav Steinman has a comment here. This is obviously illogical. And the point is that somebody who's sinning is in a state of mind, they just say ridiculous things. But this idea that there's a projection that you see in others what's really coming from you is also very much at the core of the whole lashon hara transgression that has so much to do with why we are here today. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Biurim on Rashi has a whole discussion about how this relates to Tisha B'Av. And he notes also that part of the bracha, though, is that it also contains the solution, that just like you can project negatively, you can also realize the positive truth, and you can allow that to project backwards. And therefore, there's also the promise of the redemption there in the same pasuk, in the same language that tells us about the kilkul, that tells about the problem. Rashi's interpretation contains the promise of the redemption as well. And then the next pasuk, it goes on to talk about how they complained that they saw terrible fortifications that really scared them, that the nation that they would have to conquer was incredibly powerful. Am gadol v'ram imenu, arim gadolos v'tzuris b'shamayim, that there is great cities fortified all the way up to Shemayim, all the way up to the sky. So Rashi says that this is a lashon havai, that this is an exaggerated language that's based on a Gemara in Chulin and Daf Tzadi in Mibbeis. And Rashi says over there that this is a lashon hejit, that people who aren't careful, so they say false things. They end up lying, not necessarily because they're looking to lie, but they're not careful in their speech, and they end up creating a false impression. And the Gemara in Erechin on Daf Tezvav Mer Aleph, the Gemara tells us that lashon hara, you know it's really bad. How do you know? Look at the Meraglim. So the Meraglim got in trouble for speaking about land, all the more so, Sakava Chomer. You can imagine how much trouble you get for speaking about a person. So Rabbeinu Gershom, in explaining that Gemara, that the Rambam, that the Meraglim, rather, got in trouble for speaking about people. So Rabbeinu Gershom quotes this pasuk, and some of the later Svarim don't understand why this pasuk necessarily represents the Lashon Hara. of the Meraglim, certainly compared to some other things. So perhaps the point is that that's the issue, that again, the exaggeration that comes from having a very imprecise attitude, that you're not really being careful how you speak, and very often when people are already oriented in a negative way, and they're thinking in that direction, so their exaggeration just takes them to crazy places, and they say things that are literally false because they're not being careful anymore, and they're basically functioning from a confirmation bias. They're functioning from trying to continue their original impression and taking that to extreme lengths, and that's very much what Lashon Hara is about. So even this seemingly relatively innocuous exaggeration is actually reflective of that same shoresh of Lashon Hara. Maybe that's what Rabbeinu Gershom is pointing out. So just skip a little bit now to Pasuk Lamed Beis. The Pasuk said, "V'davar hazeh einchem aminim b'Hashem Elokeichem." And this matter, you didn't believe in God. Rashi says this matter that God says He promised to bring you into the land, and that you refuse to believe. And that's a reflection of the not just the negativity, but the kfira of the Meraglim and those who accepted this report and the Sefer Beis Av. Quote in the Sefer Ol Moshe. So he has a lengthy discussion about how this really highlights the whole connection between the Bechia of that time, the crying of the time of the acceptance of the report, and the Bechia Ladaris of Tisha B'Av. It's a lack of emuna, it's a lack of overall faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And he notes there, that's why when they read the book of Iyov, that's one of the texts that we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. And that requires a little explanation, because the notion that it's allowed because it's Devarim Haroim, because it's negative. So yes, Iyov had these terrible tragedies, but that's the beginning. That's not what the whole Sefer is about. But rather, the whole Sefer is about ultimately placing it within a context of Emunah. And that's a crucial message for Tisha B'Av. And that's a big part of what we are trying to cultivate. So we'll just note here now the very important pasuk at the very end of the Aliyah, second to last pasuk. So Moshe is talking about how they sinned with this whole episode of the Meraglim, and it leads to the fact that the Meraglim themselves and those who accepted the report don't end up going into the land. And the only exception is Kalev and also Yehoshua. And here we first suggest that in between, it's kind of a parenthetical explanation of how Yehoshua ends up taking over the leadership, and he's the one who goes in. But it's a very crucial pasuk, the second to last pasuk in the Aliyah, pasuk Lamed Zayin. Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem lemor gam ata lo savosham. That God also got angry against me because of you and said, I'm not going to go in. So this is difficult in a couple of levels, and all the Mefarshim have a hard time with this pasuk, because what exactly is being stated here? That first of all, it seems like he's changing the subject. He was talking about the Meraglim, and now he's talking about Meimariva, apparently, because that's what keeps Moshe out, and why is he blaming it on them? So the Chizkuni has an interpretation here, which I think is a difficult path to go down. He's saying, because of you, you made me get mad, so I wasn't careful. So that's why I'm not going in. And that's a problematic idea, because the notion of kas is one that the Torah asks of us to control, even if we think that somebody else is making us angry, to say, it's your fault, you made me angry, and that's why I'm not going in, seems to be a very difficult pshat. The Torah Arach, the Torah writes that the whole situation wouldn't have come up if it weren't for the Chet HaMeraglim, Mei Meriva. They would have already been in Eretz Yisrael by then, but they were stuck in the Midbar all that extra time because of the Chet HaMeraglim, so it all ties back to that. The Ramban discusses this in a different sense, and trying to figure out how this connects and what exactly is the message. So the Ramban says that after the Chet HaMeraglim, many decades after, so you did another Avera, and the Avera at Mei Meriva, and Moshe is saying, I got involved with that, and that's why I can't go in because of my part in that. He's listing all of the people who are excluded from the land because of the Avera. And Leman Chem is because of you, meaning that because the Avera was a lack of Kiddush Hashem, that Moshe and Aaron did not sanctify God's name in front of them, that was what was so crucial. If it wasn't about the whole public display, they could have gotten forgiven for this misstep. So it's because of who they were dealing with, because of the Jewish people and their lack of emunah. That was the problem, and it led to Moshe and Aaron essentially causing the people to have even a weaker emunah, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was declaring as this lack of Kiddush Hashem. In the Das Kanim, the Bali Atosus, they write that it was your lack of emunah, the Jewish people, their lack of emunah, that led them to think that Moshe was hitting the rock because Moshe thought that the water wasn't going to come, and that's what made it so egregious. So that's one path to go down. The Or HaChaim has a comment here where he disagrees with this whole Mahalach, because to say it's about Memariva specifically, he thinks is difficult because the Aliyah is clearly all talking about the Meraglim, and all of a sudden to change the subject now to Memariva seems jarring. The Kli Yakar notes that the episode of the Meraglim showed the lack of emunah that the Jews have, and that made it all that much more important that Moshe not act the way that he did with hitting the rock. So therefore, there's a straight line between one and the other. The Netziv has a little bit differently. The Netziv says that the Meraglim, essentially, they were asking for Al Pi Derech HaTeva. They wanted a natural way to go into the land rather than the pure Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now that was why it became so important that Moshe be able to emphasize the leadership of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that was now missing because of that, and that became so much more of a problem. And that's essentially what caused this issue to be so overemphasized. The Or HaChaim, he has a more complicated way of explaining the connection, but a big part of it is, he says, the connection between the two is that even though the problems start with the Meraglim, but Memariva was an opportunity to fix everything, and Moshe lost that opportunity to fix everything, and that's the relationship between the two. But we could also say more broadly, and again also as far as it connects to the whole Tisha B'Av mentality, is that that Chet of the Meraglim, that turned on this Mida of seeing everything in a very negative and unfair and unjustified way, and that essentially turned up the volume to such an extent that everything later plays out in a much more damaging way. And again, that is so much of what we are dealing with in the contemporary era, and with the whole Tisha B'Av situation, that it all comes from this Midah of negativity. It's associated with Lashon Hara and Dibas Haaretz and everything we've been talking about, and it plays out then in every arena. Everything else is seen in a exaggerated and unfair way, because it comes from that very Midah that we still have not yet fixed. It's also important to highlight, especially if we're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu got in trouble for losing his temper. So this same pasuk seems to suggest that he's saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lost his temper against him. And that's something which, especially in context, needs a little more explanation. And the Sefer Aksava HaKabbalah has a whole discussion over here where he says that that's the way the language works, but it doesn't mean to suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry in the same kind of way. It's because the impact, the onesh, is felt as an expression of anger as far as the human being relates to it. And he draws a comparison that when you have a judge who makes a sentence and then the officers have to carry out the sentence, so the sentence is not being imposed through anger, but for it to be carried out, it has to be done with a certain awareness of its harshness and negativity, and that's how it's experienced by the one who's going through it. So essentially, that's what this pasuk is conveying, not that God lost his temper, but that we became the recipients of what amounts to an angry decision because of our behavior. And of course, that's also part of the mentality we bring to the whole Kinos experience and everything that we are going to lament over the course of Tisha B'Av, talk about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is acting objectively, but we see it as anger, and we see it as kas, essentially, because that's what we go through, and that's the only way we can relate to it and to understand how we have to act to turn it around. And we'll just note generally that, again, it's so powerful, the day before Tisha B'Av, the day that is technically Tisha B'Av, the day before the observance of Tisha B'Av, to hear this whole story recounted and to think about all the details. And it's also relevant that in the preceding psukim, before this third aliyah, So Moshe Rabbeinu was also going through the halachos of judges and telling us all the rules of careful judgment. When we learned Bava Basra this year, we noted that one of the possible sources for the rules that make up the opening prakim of Bava Basra are psukim in the beginning of Dvarim, where Moshe really talks about the importance of careful judgment and fairness and justice within the Jewish people. And there are certain halachos that are derived there, halachos of Lo Sakiru Panim, and Shamoa Bein Achichem, that you have to give equal treatment to everyone, and you have to make sure to hear everyone talking at once. You can't have ex parte communication. So there are halachos here about judgment that are not simply about corruption, about people who are taking bribes and looking to pervert justice, but just the kinds of small mistakes in perspective that totally throw you off course, and that's what leads to big mistakes. And we're not always sensitive to that, about how even minor expressions of bias, of unfairness, of listening to one side without the other, so that we then have a skewed perspective, all of this is what sets us on a very dangerous course. And sometimes the mistakes can then come to be very serious, and that's what this Aliyah of the Meraglim then comes right out of all of those halachos that are learned in the beginning of the parsha about the fairness that's required of a judge, not only in avoiding overt corruption, but even these small things that can change our whole perspective. And all of us are judges, but not necessarily in a judicial role sitting at a bench with litigants or defendants coming in front of us. But every day we make judgments. We make judgments about others. We make judgments about our situations. And the lack of doing so with care and objectivity and fairness is what leaves us in this situation of Tisha B'Av. It's what leaves us having sinas chinam, having a hate that is unwarranted, that is not justified by the situation, but we tell ourselves it's justified because we aren't careful enough to think things through the way we need to. We're not careful enough to avoid losing our temper, to give ourselves over to exaggeration, to all of the different details that the Aliyah conveys to us, to the lack of appreciating wisdom and experience and acting berbuvia and bebehilus and pizizus, with a disregard for calm rationality and the mesinos, the deliberate judgment that is required in all areas of life, not only in an actual courtroom. All of this is the shoresh of what brings us to today, which brings us to Tisha B'Av, which brings us to our contemporary galus. And it is our mission to think about this very carefully. So as we hear this Aliyah read in shul on the morning of the 9th of Av, we hope to internalize these values and to reorient our perspective and to perhaps think about the fact that Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, the two biggest fasts of the year, two days that have a lot in common and a lot that are different from each other. And perhaps one difference is that Yom Kippur is about talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Tisha B'Av is more about speaking to ourselves, is more about trying to set ourselves straight so that we are able to see things properly and to recognize that it is these mistakes in perspective and in midos and in attitudes that can lead us so far astray. So it should be our bracha that we should indeed be able to successfully talk to ourselves over this Tisha B'Av, the 9th, and the observance on the 10th, and that we should internalize all of these messages that the episode of the Meraglim is teaching us and that is being reviewed for us at this very appropriate time. And in the effort to internalize these messages, we should be successful, and we should be able to bring an end to the Bechi Ledoros that started with the Meraglim, and that we should no longer have to cry on these days, we should no longer have to mourn on Tisha B'Av. Instead, we should soon see a Geula Shlema, and these days should be days of celebration. I wish you a good Shabbos and a very meaningful Shabbos Chazon.